Are you okay?
Chapter 4? The Cab Driving Terrier.
Oh, Jesus.
By Don Chaney. Read by Max Chaney. Chaney.
Wait, two Chaneys?
Two Chaneys.
Is that a coincidence?
Might be. Chapter 4. Carly! Imbecile!
The stupid dumbass, known also as my sister, was in the middle of the kitchen with a stethoscope in her hand. I was in the middle of the kitchen gulping down the number 10 plate. Chicken testicles con guava. I looked at the plate and wished I would never hear anything again. What the freaking hell is this? I tried to keep my voice low. I wanted everyone to think it was Dad. Carly wasn't fooled. She hit me right in the eye, caramba. Look, you poor excuse for an idiot. This house has enough fairies. Carly was right. We also had our fair share of podiatrists, and we had one more than our share of stupid brothers. That's for sure. Except I'm the only authentic idiot, and I'm standing here staring at a number 10 plate of chichi balls and a peanut sauce, I said. I watched as the cold goo turned blue. Now what I was gulping was a palpable desert plant. I stopped using my fingers and started using my toes. You sure have a way with saying nothing, but suggesting desperation, Dad, I told him. I'm sure you believe that ghosts are coming to take you away, and I'm sure you pour salt on every munchkin you come upon. Can you imagine what would happen if we sent you to scrub floors where the sun don't shine? For a time, it looked like Carly was going to rip off her vest. Then who knows what would happen? I don't know what would happen, I confessed, and I'm one of the smartest assholes around here. Great, but that don't matter shit to me. Me was cruising for a bruising. I was looking at myself because I couldn't see Dad, and Mom wasn't talking to me unless it was about decapitation. I'm supposed to know which way to the tennis courts, and for a time I did, but then my sister started kicking my ass on a regular basis, and I'd start to cry because no one would pass me the ball. What's up, Mickey? Still dabbling in the medieval cowboy fezzes that aren't up or down? Look who's talking, hathead. You're the one who thinks the universe is atrophying, aren't you? This is a recording. Oh, sucker, sucker! Now I was imitating the voice of a female Gouda. Great. Now I'm really not paying attention, Carly said. I was still trying to peel the echo off that one when she continued. You are the creepiest creature in the entire armada. Great. And who died and laid you out like an egg on fire? I asked her. Would you rather chase cowboy ghosts or move the world one inch at a time? Come on, bring it, Carly said. You don't think I know everything, right? You don't believe that the ghost armada has pulled into port, and you don't believe nothing, do you? I know the average wing speed of the American kestrel, Carly hissed when she should have been doing was conjuring up visions of some ghostly armada. But I knew that she knew that fondue was not new. But I did not know what was not known. Come on, she talked, walked, and absconded with the talk. Come on, I'll kick your ass in a heartbeat. I went into the kitchen and doubled over in laughter at how large my penis was. It was so large I couldn't feel it unless there was quiet and I could concentrate. It wasn't what I wanted to hear myself saying or thinking. But the Museum of Misery and Hysteria can scare the motherfucking pants off of your arms. When the light of the silvery moon turned on again, I closed the window, shut down my sobriety, and started pounding back black and tans. And if that wasn't enough, I poured everything down my gullet, put a lampshade on my head, a different planet for each day on my underwear, and then I ceased to exist. And then I heard a churro. That I had heard a churro meant that I was just one pizza from passing them out. It was 5th and 20, and time to punt. I had taken a detour from rudeness right into a cesspool of Canadian League footballers. And I only had myself to blame. Big surprise. I had it made and didn't know it. Everyone had it made. For example, the museum never, ever runs out of churros. That is, in practice, they never run out. In theory, they're serving up churros as old as Donald Trump. Except at night. When night is mirroring day and the sun is where the houses don't shine, that's when we have company over to the museum. Or at least my sister does. And then she uses it for an elaborate game of hide me under the misery and set me on fire. We all went into the kitchen, where Dad's ant collection was hung. Everyone liked the objects except for the one central to Dad's collection. A little piece called, what the fucking shit happened here? Every day I swear I'm going to take out my Luger and just start shooting. And every night I hear tiny gremlins playing in the kitchen. After I call 911, I count to 11 and turn on my other side. I go into Carly's room where I start hissing until she says something nice about me. But usually I settle for, "Get the fuck out of my room, dirtbag!" But this night, Carly wouldn't say a word. And for as long as we've sponged off our parents in this house, this was a first. This night, she gently took me by the hand and rudely threw a marshmallow pie in my face. I felt my way out of her room. Everyone was applauding and then suddenly stopped. Old man Spellman had walked back into the house with his seeing eye anteater and his hat full of hearsay. Who gives a rat's tablet about Spellman? For all we knew, what we care about today, we wouldn't give a rat's ass about tomorrow. What used to be the new way to ladle out the contents of a mannequin was now the old way to kill Dracula. What this had to do with getting from the Carly's bedroom to the front door, I only know. And I'm not telling. I will tell you that it has something to do with pouring the contents of a mannequin into Dracula. But this is like trying to take care of a tennis shoe with asparagus. Sure, it smells like Chivas, but it will leave telltale rings around your teeth. A small submarine moved up and down my spine. And so I started singing like a boy band. And that's when I got really depressed. "You're not so good a singer, are you, Mickey?" That was a Brahma bull talking. That was Carly. It was as if I had died and then confided in her that I couldn't say no. Clearly not. Why was I talking but my lips not moving? Before I could figure that out, my voice was on again. "You can't knock me out with temerity. Jesus H. Christ," I had said. But it was more like I had digested it. Carly looked at me like I was from Brazil. "Mike, what? What did you just say to me?" I said, "Go pee on old man Spellman's lap for all Arthur Rimbaud cares." I might have let myself. "If you're trying to piss me off, take a number," I suspected she had said. "Otherwise, you can talk to me through Dad." "I can't speak straight to your fat ass?" "My fat ass?" "Oh no, my friend, now you're starting to nauseate me," she replied. "If you let your guard down for 1 second, I'll kick the living shit out of you," I said at the tone. She didn't have a segue, and she didn't want a segue, but Carly made up for that by having a para-segue. This was done by turning anything anyone said around on them, and then there'd be complete silence, and silence can segue into anything. Sambas, tortoises, even some asshole who had a metallic finger. "Which ocean is brown and white and red all over? And who dares ask me?" Carly said in a voice that sounded like Toblerone chocolate. "Come on, y'all think you're not pansies just because I believe in ghosts? Or do you want me to punch out, or do you want to punch me out until I look like Jimmy Durante, late for the costume ball and dressed as the lunatic fringe?" Nobody was going to touch that. Principally because anyone who's human believes in ghosts. That and malnutrition. What she really wanted was for everyone to act like Sir Thomas with too many kilometers on his Reg Dodge Pantsier, because the more miles, the more money. And the more money, the more life becomes like a museum full of pajamas. Finally, we were able to get from the salad bar to the front yard and then back into the kitchen, where Dad was now passing out sacks of entrails to everyone, all the while humping a mannequin and measuring the square feet of his house. I'd seen him humping the kitchen counter once, and I'd seen him taking turns throwing pies at the neighborhood drug dealers and cannibals, but I'd never seen him humping a mannequin. It was as if Dad was trying to get a leg up on the entire world. Then he was humping a mosquito. The way he reeked of cheap cologne, it was a miracle he could hump a dead milk snake, which he was also doing. And in the middle of all this, I fell asleep, but my shoes kept walking circles around myself. At least I wasn't running circles around some showroom dummy. Throughout the night, old man Spellman was always showcasing his bad attitude. But fortunately, he was always mouthing off also. I could see that he'd rather mouth off at my dad than any gold rabbi. He'd rather mouth off than talk to Charlie. Charlie was my idea of a frenetic suck-up. He had the brazenly rigid and tired look of a dilettante. He had 100 fingers and his eyes looked like an ocelot's. They looked directly at you without seeing. He was rude, and whenever he spat, he never hit what he intended to hit. "You fucking spit on my antipasta," I said while holding Carly's hand. I was going to kick his parsley ass, but I thought there'd be retribution. Dad would probably cold cock me, and Mom would just laugh. The meat sack, also known as Carly, was a kilometer from the window, and I was just a detour from the open door when I panicked. Finally, my lunch came back to me. Me and my shadow. I could lend you some charcoal, I offered. Carly didn't respond. She looked like she was going to respond by calling me a homebrew. And this while wearing a lab coat and imitating Marky Mark. Instead, she slapped me. I looked all around, but I didn't see her. There was an empty space where she once was. My hand habitually struck out at the air. Yeah.